the Let's Talk Divots podcast. We are your women's professional golf podcast. My name is Casey Johnson. I'm a co-host along with my good buddy Ronnie Dunn. We are at Let's Talk Divots on all social media platforms. Please go ahead, like, share, follow, comment, tweet. Get at us. We'd love to hear from you just about what's going on in golf. And if we'd like to hear any specific guests or anything like that, just go ahead and give us a shout out. Ronnie, how are you, brother?
I'm really, really good, Casey. Real good. Yeah, come at us with anything you guys want. Any questions you want to ask some of the girls? We'll get some girls out there. You let us know who you want, and we'll try to go find them.
And what's our email? Letstalkdivots@gmail.com. Don't hesitate to fire us an email if you're more of an email person. And we just had an awesome interview. I was really stoked for it because, well, I work for her. We just had, who do we have on the show, Ronnie?
Kelly Tam from Malaysia. Wonderful interview. Your boss.
Yeah. We dove into it that a little bit. We kind of treaded water lightly, which is fine. And honestly, she had such a great story. Like, once I started researching, I was like, this is awesome. From, we never got into the Olympics too much with her, but she's an Olympian. She quit school at 16 to pursue her dreams. She's been on a reality Korean golf TV series, which she won. She's just really, really a great success story from achieving your dreams.
Yeah, and I think 2020 is going to be her season. I really predict you guys are going to get a win out there. She's motivated. She's got fire in her belt. She's going to let's just wait and see. I don't want to put it out there first before she lifts that trophy, but I'll bet she's going to have a big paycheck here this year.
An up-and-coming, hard-working, good-looking caddy on her bag, too. That's really going to help. But, no, she's going to do all the work. And, just hopefully we can get back out there. But that's the current climate, and we're making the best of it. So please dig your heels in and enjoy this conversation with myself, Captain Ron Dunn, and Kelly Tan. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Let's Talk Divots. I am actually quite excited about this because we have Kelly Tan on the line. Kelly, say hello, please.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
And Ronnie Dunn. What's going on, Ronnie?
Hey. Welcome, Kelly. It's nice to meet you. I'm looking forward to our talk.
Yeah, sounds good. Same here.
I'm excited because I work for Kelly. I get to carry her bag inside the ropes on the tour here. Even though it's only been a couple of events, we hooked up in Australia, and since then, we're all going through the new norm of the old COVID crisis. So really excited to dive in and just probe my boss a little bit. So, Kel, let's start off. I'm also excited because you we've adopted you, it seems, as a Canadian. You're in Canada. You're in Calgary. Tell us about that. Please, the weather is horrible up there.
No, it's been actually really great. The past few weeks been awful. We're going to have, double digits this week and next week. And today is actually up to 18, should be 18 degrees outside right now. But I'm in my basement. I'm a little chilly. And my boyfriend lives in Calgary, and that's why I'm here. I come here to visit. And when I got the email saying that the Phoenix event was canceled, I booked my flight here right away just because it was way closer here for me to go home than flying all the way back to Malaysia, not knowing if I was gonna make it without stopping for quarantine,
sure. And Calgary's my adopted home city. I know that the golf courses probably aren't going to open up till May. I've seen lots of information through the National Golf Course Owners Association that they are going to let some courses open. Have you heard anything there? Are you going to get to swing the clubs up in that neck of the woods?
No, like I spoke to a couple of the head pros around the area, and they're all not sure, if they're going to be able to open up. But a lot of them are prepping just because we have such nice weather. So I'm just really hoping that we get to go out, and I feel like golf courses should be able to open. Maybe should let the people walk instead of taking carts, so nobody is touching nobody, and you should be able to social distancing yourself out on the golf course.
I think you'll see a lot opening up soon, just from the people that I've talked to up there in the neck of the woods. So really hoping that you can get out and sharpen the tools for a June restart. I don't know how you feel about that. You know,
I haven't swung in 5 weeks, so we'll see.
Well, you seem to be doing a lot of work. You're doing a lot of working out there on Instagram. I see every day posing new poses and really getting your body in shape.
Yeah, I love working out, and I love, you know, the program that my trainer's given me. Without, you know, I don't need any tools, and I just need, you know, a little 6 feet by 6 feet down here in my basement, and medicine ball and some foam roll, and where I go.
Perfect.
So are you exclusively at home, or is there any time in the gym, or is that, I mean, this is coming from somebody who doesn't really work out in the gym. But are they all closed as well? I assume so, huh?
Yeah. Gyms are all closed. And, my trainer actually has his gym set up in his basement. I just didn't want to go just because, you know, I don't need to go. If I have any question, I just FaceTime him, and I can work out with him that way over FaceTime. And I think I'm fortunate that way. And I like staying home and do nothing, watch a few Netflix series and cook and work out. And yeah, it's kind of nice to relax.
Yeah, some stuff that everybody seems to be really reconnecting with themselves. And that's important as life on the road, you know, gets a little bit hectic, right?
No, for sure.
To stay on the fitness, you know, I think a lot of the women are going to come back in a whole lot better. Not that they were, you know, everybody's pretty serious out there, but, you know, really, really good physical shape. Would you agree? Everybody seems to be taking pretty serious.
Yeah, I think so. I scroll on my Facebook and Instagram, all I see is people working out. So it's kind of nice that way, because I feel like, you know, I'm motivated that way, watching, you know, other players working out, and just know that, you know, you're just everyone's trying to stay in shape and try to keep themselves healthy before the tour opens back up in June and we're ready to go.
And is that the motivation? Is that the part getting you out of bed in the morning? Is like, we're going to get back on tour. I need to be the best Kelly that I can be when we get out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I, you know, for me, workout is one of my hobbies. So it's not like, oh, I got to get up and go to work. It's like, I actually look forward to tomorrow when I get up and I get to wear my gym clothes and just work out right here. And it's just something that I love doing, and it's like a me time to me.
One of the things I noticed right when I started working for you is actually how functional your body seemed to be. Like, as a, you know, somebody with a coaching background and quite active in sport, and just, you know, TPI certified, all that sort of stuff. For any listeners, that's Titleist Performance Institute. It's about the functional movement with the golf swing and the body, and you just seem like a really well-rounded athlete. Have you ever been through any screenings or anything like that with your golf fundamental movement patterns?
Yeah, well, I grew up in a pretty sporty family. I'd say my dad's a big-time sportsman, and, you know, growing up, I play every single sport I could ever sign up for myself, just because I want to skip classes in school. But yeah, I play every sport, and I think that helped growing up. And on the fitness side of things, I work with my trainer, and we don't lift heavy. We lift heavy in the off season. Unfortunately, I can't right now just because I don't have the tools. If not, I would assume we would be doing that. And yeah, just doing a lot of mobility exercises, and to make sure that, you know, we're able to use all the muscles that I need to the right way. Plus, I get to move the way it's supposed to. And so I think that's very important, instead of, you know, going to the gym and lift, squat 800 pounds. That won't do any good for your body. So
I was just wondering, what other sports did you excel at other than golf as a youngster over there in Malaysia?
Yeah, I would say I would say volleyball, even though I ran hurdles and I ran 100 and 200. I wouldn't consider myself great, but I would say I was a good volleyball player, because I was a captain for, you know, 3 years for my state, and I got to play for my state for a few years. And in fact, when I was 12, I got chosen to play on the under 18 team for my state. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Wow, that's great.
At the age of 12, you know, you see all these big girls and they're like giants. But, you know, it's cool that they saw my talent and I was proud of it. And I love my volleyball team live and I miss them. But I'm glad volleyball led me to golf.
I'm gonna say, because I play a little bit of volleyball, with your height, you were probably a setter.
Yes, absolutely. I was a setter.
And, you know, what was the transition like from team sport into golf sport?
Oh, it's very different. I would say both have pros and cons. You know, team sport, if you wake up tomorrow and don't do your best, your team could still win. I guess that's the pro side of it, and the con side of it is if you are that star player, you kind of have to make sure you play well. And for golf, it's all you, and that's what I love about golf, because sometimes I would play on my team for volleyball and I would think I did everything I could possibly not to let the ball drop, and somehow we still lose. And with golf, it's if you screw up, you screw up. So that's what I love about golf, and I can, you know, after the round, I can just kind of look back and see what I did well and what I didn't do as well. And I work on that. And hopefully the next day I can do better. So that's what I love about golf.
Yeah, you certainly get the highs and the lows, though, as well, being an individual sport. And just, again, as a coaching background, I've always been on the emphasis, and there's a lot of statistics out there to definitely back this up. I'm under the, like, you know, judging by, you said you'd pick up any sport as a kid or a teenager, a multi-sport background. How do you think that helped you when you did transition to golf? Because how old were you when that transition happened? And, you know, just to talk about that, please.
Yeah, I would say between 12, 13, 14. That's where I play a lot of sports at the same time. And it does help, just because I think, especially for girls, it gives you that sense of sport. I don't know if that's even a word. I don't know if you understand what I'm trying to say. You get that sense of, you know, the ball sense, or, you know, the timing and the rhythm part of things all together. And I think that helps, especially with golf. It's all about your timing and your rhythm, not necessarily, you know, if you're strong, you're going to hit it far. So, yeah, I think, did that answer your question?
Yeah, no, that's great. I'll just keep going on that. And, like, I think, you know, correct me if I'm catching up to this, is like, yeah, you have a better awareness about your body, right? Because it's not just that mm-hmm. one movement. You're taking you're diving for spikes. You're, you know,
yeah,
you're running hurdles. You just have a much fuller sense of who you are, what you can do. You're falling, you're scraping your knees, you're figuring other things out. So I think your whole awareness is just like that much more. Because like you said, when you yeah. do pick up a golf club, that movement pattern is so specific, the coordination, the agility, the balance in order to hit a golf ball. You know, right. I read an article where your dad gave you a club and you sat there, hit a bunch of balls. And I think he looked at you and was like, holy shit, you're pretty good at this, you know? And that's just from a coaching standpoint, I always wanted an athlete that I'll take a 13-year-old that's played a bunch of sports over a 13-year-old that has been just excelling in golf since they were, you know, 6, 7 years old. I'd rather take the kid that never touched a club before.
Right, right. I think that was important I'm grateful that I was able to play that many sports growing up, and I love them all.
All right, well, let's dive into that a bit then. So growing up in Malaysia, what's some differences in the golfing growing up there as opposed to maybe something you might see in the North America?
Well, first of all, I think I didn't grow up in a Ritz-Carlton country club girl. the courses, I mean, not now that when I go home, I don't even want to golf at that course. It's that horrible. So no offense, but it brings me to who I am today. I do go out and walk 9 holes with my dad, just to bring back memories. But today I still don't understand why I fell in love golfing, because like now that I've been over in the States for almost 10 years, I've seen families that, you know, introduce their kids to golf, and all they wanted to do is because, you know, there's nice fried chicken wings at the club, or there's a fancy pool, or there's an amazing, I don't know, locker room that they can go hang out with their friends. So I think that's a difference. I would also say it's because of where I grew up. I didn't grow up in a big city. I grew up in a very small city, but with a lot of people. It's Batu Pahat. It's down south in Malaysia, and it takes 45 minutes to go around, and there's 500,000 people that live there. So it just gives you a perspective of how congested the little city is. And it's mostly like a business kind of city, not so much of, you know, people playing sports or anything. But now that I've, you know, when I go back in the winter to visit my mom and dad, I see more kids, not a lot, but more than when I started, that's now golfing. I hope that, you know, people in Malaysia are gonna pick up golf, like kids especially, and because it just gets them out of the house playing their video games, and they can be outside socializing.
How is the junior program over there nowadays? Probably not so a lot better than it was when you started.
I said it's been awful, to be honest. Like, it's almost embarrassing, because every year I go back, I try to follow up with, you know, people that's in charge, and it just seems like it's unfortunate. I don't know why the government or the country doesn't want to support that. I don't know if it's because they don't see the value or what, because I feel like during my time, my batch was the luckiest, because we got a huge funds from the government, and you know, we got to go to pretty much anywhere in Asia to compete, and we got the best coach, the best trainers, the best nutritionists. We got the best of everything during my time for that 3 to 5 years, which, like, I was right in it, so I was very, very lucky. But if I were to go back and approach him, I would go, look at what you did in 2005 to 2010. Like, you produced an LPGA player. Like, and back then you only had 20 girls. Like, imagine what you could do now. But
yeah, strange that when all of a sudden they have a face on the tour, the representation, you know, the Olympics, all this sort of stuff should really, really, really be able to capitalize. So hopefully, hopefully they get that looked after in the future. But let's just stay here for a few minutes longer, because I also, and again, you know, maybe not something that you that comes up in 2 weeks of working with somebody, but when I was researching your story a little bit, I saw that you convinced your parents to quit school at the age of 16 so you could concentrate on golf. And when they came back at you with, like, that's ridiculous, you said, I will work at my father's, or I will work at the family business. Can you, I think that is just awesome.
Yeah, well, you know, I come from a family of 5 kids, and I was the middle child. And it seems to me like whenever I ask my parents that I want to do something, they would say, oh, okay, what? Like, they didn't seem to really care. I mean, I know that they love me, but it's not like I wasn't the first child or the only child or the baby of the family that they're like, oh, you have to be careful. You know, like, they seem to always be very supportive and just make sure I, you know, make the right choices. And so I remember when I was 15, I won my first national title, and I thought it was really cool. And when I was 16, I won the second time. And that's when I go, you know what, I think I really want to pursue, like, I love golf, and I love going to practice, and I love everything about the sport. And I just decided that, you know, like, maybe professional golf is what I wanted to do. Like, I never have I ever thought, like, when I was playing volleyball, that I wanted one day play for Malaysia, like, or play in the Olympics, like, you know, never like that. But I think I love the challenges with golf, and that's why I've made that choice. And so I went to my parents and I go, you know what, like, I don't really want to go to school, because like, it doesn't mean anything if I were to graduate high school. Like, well, I guess it means something, but it's not like I've grew up dreaming wanting to be a doctor, a lawyer, or...
You've known what you want to do. You know, like, this is what I want to put my energy in.
Yeah, I knew what I wanted to do, and I knew that I never was going to be a doctor or lawyer that needs a cert, like a certificate from the university. So I was like, why would I want to waste my parents' money and my time to do something that I don't even see the future with, you know? I mean, I get it now that I'm 10 years later, I look back and I'm like, geez, if I was my parents, I would have probably killed myself. And yeah, I just told them that, you know, like, school's not for me and I don't want to go to school. I think it's a waste of time. Like, I would rather spend all my time on a golf course and work at what I really love, and hopefully, you know, one day I can play on the tour. And they're like, do you know what the risks are? And like, do you know? Like, I mean, I get it. It's tough. It's difficult. And I never knew how extreme it was. Like, now that I look back, I'm like, oh my God, what a risk that I took. I mean, I'm glad I took it and pursued my dream. But from my parents' side of view, I'm like, oh, like, it's got to be hard to tell your kids that, you know what, it's okay. Like, you don't have to, like, my parents are not wealthy or anything. Like, I've got no backups. Like, and I totally get where they're coming from. And my mom's like, I'm not cursing or anything, but I just want you to know, like, you can wake up tomorrow and your hand doesn't work and you can't golf ever. Like, and then what are you going to do? I'm like, well, then I'm going to go and be a salesperson at dad's car dealership. Like, I'm not gonna starve. Like, I know I'm not gonna starve. Like, I'm a survivor.
Where did your drive come from? Winning that tournament? Is that what drives you, winning?
Yeah, I won a lot of, like, state championships and stuff in Malaysia, and I felt like I was good enough. I don't know. I love the sport. I think that's why, and I feel like I can be good enough. I think that's where the drive came from, and I don't know.
I think that's I'm not against that. I just think it's just unconventional. I mean, as I go through life, I think, you know, the school system looks more and more broken. It's just something that was, you know, infiltrated, you know, 100 years ago, et cetera.
Right.
For somebody to take a stab at something when they're 16 years old and say, this is what I want to do, I want to put my energy into it. We've certainly seen it before. People not going to, you know, I think because we're so privileged to the Americanized, like, you know, we don't see Asia, okay? So when somebody comes out of high school and doesn't go to, and this is going to lead into my next question, go to, like, you know, a superstar that turns pro at 18, it doesn't go into university and train, you know, like, it's just something for some reason we don't see it. It seems, I haven't been on tour that long, but it seems to be a little bit different from the Asian players. Like, could you speak on that? Like, is there, like, you come out of, and don't go to necessarily, like, a college in the U.S. It's like, our path is like, well, we're going to go to the China tour, the Korean tour. Maybe we're going to go do Q Series in the States. But, like, is that, like, whole college thing just an Americanized thing? I'm Canadian. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. I would say that's more like an American dream kind of, like, sure. You know, someone that would grow up and be like, oh, this is the plan, you know. But I wouldn't say that's like an Asian's dream, like, compared to the American dream, you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
But it's more like, I think it's quite personal, and I'm not sure if the culture side of things, I can't really speak to that, like, has anything to do with that. But, like, growing up, I was very, very dedicated. Like, I think I've shown my parents enough, like, how much I wanted to be working on golf and wanting to be a golf professional, that they see, okay, like, I think she's being serious, like, you know, she works, I don't know, I can be on a course, like, from sunrise to sunset, like, until the light shuts, and I wait for my parents to come pick me up, and I don't get tired of it, I just am excited to go to bed and get up in the morning and do the same thing. So I think they see that, and they go, okay, like, maybe she is disciplined, she is dedicated, she is loving it. So, well, I told them, I said, if I do want to go back to school, I always can go back to school. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm 40. Like, so I think they see that side of me, and they go, okay, well, as long as you're putting 100% into what you're doing, then we'll support you. And I'm very, very grateful to have that kind of parents. And I don't even know if I'll be that parent next time when my kids grow up and go, Mom, I don't want to go to school. I want to go. I'm like, you're crazy.
Chase your dreams. I love it. Now talk us through. Yeah. Okay, you're 16. You've shown some serious signs of progressing in golf. What was the step, and what year did you go to Q Series? How did you get your card? And I believe you had a pretty, you know, solid rookie year out there. Just talk about that transition into professional golf.
Yeah. So I quit school when I was 16, and when I was 17, that's when the LPGA came to Malaysia for the very first time, and I got invited to play as a top ranked amateur, and I finished like 30th, and I believe that time they were like, I don't know, 62 or 65 players, and I did pretty good. And right after that event, it was sponsored by Siam Derby, and Siam Derby's approached my parents, and because they've heard about my story, how I quit school and all that, and they go, you know what, like, it's a good talent that, you know, we can't let her slip, and we have to make sure that she at least finish her high school. And you know, they and my parents chatted and have decided to send me to America to IMG Golf Academy in Florida to finish my senior year of high school. And I was like, I was so against it. I'm like, I told you guys, I don't want to go to school. And they're like, no, you're going to love this. You're going to golf 8 hours and you're going to school for 3 hours. I'm like, okay, I can do with that. And it's always been my dream to come over to the United States. And I was glad that I was able to adventure, like wanting to like try out, you know, leave home and come live here by myself and play golf and go to school, where like, it's crazy because, you know, it's just, it was a big change and big transition in my life, because when I used to go to school, everything was in Malay and Mandarin and a little bit of English. Not everything was in English, and my English wasn't that good. So I was afraid of like how I wasn't gonna be able to keep up in school and stuff. And so when I, you know, finally landed here when I was 17, I had to take tests and stuff, and I was good enough to go and do my senior year of high school. And I graduated, had a fun and very experienced year in IMG, and got to play in all sort of AJGA events. And when I graduated, I got a bunch of college offers, and I was like, no, I told all the coaches, I'm like, don't even waste your time on me. I'm not going to go. They're like, no, I know you're not going to come, but just come for a visit. Like, we'll pay for everything. Da, 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 da. I'm like, no, like, I just don't want to waste your money. Like, just go invest in other players. Like, I'm going to go home and play a couple more years and probably come back to the States and go to Q school. And so that's what I did. I went home and played a couple more years on the national team, played in Southeast Asia games, which is like a mini Olympic in Southeast Asia, and I got like a bronze medal that time, and playing Asian games and playing some world amateur in Turkey, playing a few good events before I turned pro. And I finally told my parents in 2013, I'm like, all right, where's my college funds? Here's when I need it. I need to go to Q school. Here's how much I need. I did up like a spreadsheet of how much it was going to cost for each stage. At that time, it was 3 stages, and yeah, so went through the first stage, flew here by myself, like, you know, just to prepare and play it, and good enough to make it. Wasn't the top 10 or 20, I don't think. And then did the same thing for the second stage, and I didn't play amazing. I played good enough again to advance the final. And so when I went home, I'm like, all right, like, I guess I'm gonna go to my final. Like, I had no expectation entering Q school, because I told my parents that, you know, like, I just want to see where I stand. Like, I have enough. I've waited enough to, you know, and I've played so much in Asia, and I knew where I stood there. I just never put myself in like a world stage.
A measuring stick, essentially. Like, yeah. You know, it's so, like, let's go to Q school. Let's measure ourselves, because this is right. The premier tour in the world, and see how we stack up.
Yeah. I mean, I never even thought about playing in China tour. Like, that was never in my head. I told my parents, if I don't make it to the LPGA, I'll play the Sumatra now. Like, in the, America is where I want to be, like, period. So I came over here in my final, for the final stage, and I played really good 4 rounds. Not amazing. I think I was probably three under par, because I shot three under par for 4 rounds, and there was a cut, and I made the cut, and I was probably like 30 something position, and I knew you have to be in the top 20, but I didn't give myself a whole lot of pressure just because I just want to see where I stand. If I make it, it's a bonus. So my mom was with me and played the final round, and you know, I don't even remember, I don't know if you've been to LPGA International, the last hole on, I don't even know, I think it's Jones. Coming back.
We don't know, but paint the picture for the listeners, please.
Yeah, so it's a par five, very reachable. They moved the tee up, and I hit a perfect drive, and I had like, and I play meters. So I had like 180 meters front, and the pin was front, probably like 8 or 10 on. So I have 180 front, 190 hole, and my caddy. So there's left water, right bunkers, and the greens are pretty tiny. And don't remember the condition. It was probably a little breezy. And I was feeling very comfortable, okay? And my caddy's like, Kel, you don't need to go for it. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's 5 wood. Like, I hit this thing so good.
I know, Kelly. She's like, going for that.
Yeah, and he's like, it's like, no, like, I believe you only need a par to, like, get your car. So let's just not risk anything. And then, and I don't know what in me go, okay, give me a 9-iron. Like, let's hit 110 meters and flip a wedge in. And he goes, okay, that's good. So I hit a 9-iron to a layup, and I hit it to, like, 12 feet. And as I walk up to the scoreboard, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I need to birdie this hole, dude. Like, why did we, like, I was like, oh my God. But I didn't, there's still people behind me. But at that point, I needed to birdie. So I was like, oh, whatever. Like, I wasn't nervous, but I was kind of like, could have gone for it. Like, you know, like I was living like not in the present, obviously. So, and then I caught myself like, you know what? I've given myself a chance. Let's just make this thing. So I stood over the putt. It was like uphill, right to left. It was position A, and I made the putt. And it was like the biggest relief I've ever felt. And my caddy's like, "See, I told you, you have to play to your strength." Blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't even remember what he said. That's probably it. And then I ran over to my mom and gave her the biggest hug. And Marty, the official at the time, came to me and he goes, "Oh, congratulations, Kelly! Like, I know that you're playing as an amateur, but I just need to make sure that you know." You're gonna take this status, your full status, onto 2014 LPGA and declare as a profession. I'm like, I declare! I was like so excited. And so, yeah, and it was like probably 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And oh, my whole family were up watching, and they were all like calling me. And like, my dad was so happy, and he's probably bawling, but I don't know. So, yeah, it was a really happy day. And yeah, from there and go into my
first. Can I just intervene there for a sec?
Yep. Go for it.
I'm fired up about that story. That, like, if that doesn't get you motivated, like, because you hear so many stories where they like bogey or double bogey 18 to miss their card, you know? So stepping up and making birdie and just like really. From a young age, following what you want to do, going to the States, going into Q school, and just like, I don't want to say like a narrow-minded, but I'll, you know, tunnel vision to what you wanted to achieve. Is there anything that you could, you know, say to the people out there or young players, young girls listening about just like focusing on what you want and achieving something like that?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to your passion. Like, I have a lot of passion for golf, and I love golf, and I love what I'm doing. So when I go home to Malaysia and I give talks or see little kids, all I tell them is just enjoy what you're doing. If you're not enjoying it, then don't do it. Like, why do something that you love? So I think that's the biggest thing that parents need to realize, that they can't force their kids to playing golf just because they want them to be the next Brooke Henderson. You know, that does not happen, because I'm sure Brooke didn't grow up with the parents forcing her to hit golf ball in practice. And it comes down to yourself, that you want to do it yourself, and you're hungry for it, and you have passion, and you love it, and you enjoy it. And I think with all that, you should be able to achieve what you want to do.
Awesome words there. Sorry for interrupting you there, Kel, but I just thought that was a really good point. And so you get on tour and just continue, please. We're loving this.
Yeah. In 2014, I started my first tournament as a rookie on the LPGA in the Bahamas. I remember. I stayed in a fancy hotel. It was really expensive. it really hit me there. And I'm like, God, like every week you spend about $3,000, okay? Like $2,500, $3,000, including your caddy, your flights, your car, your hotels, and your food. Like I have to make the cut. Like I have to make the cut just to break even. Like at that time, I mean, I was very fortunate. I have a sponsor and had a sponsor at that time, and you know, my expenses were taken care of. And so it took a lot of pressure off for sure. But you know, along the way, I met a lot of friends on tour that who does not have support. Some even took out loans, and I just hear those stories and I go, you know, maybe those were true. Like people that sleeps in the car and drives to the next tournament, not necessarily on the LPGA tour, but I'm sure on other Metro tour, people does that. And yeah, that Bahamas event really hit me as, I guess, being an LPGA tour player is not as glamorous as it seems on TV. And but I still love it. I made the cut on my first tournament. I think I finished probably like 40 something, 50th, and I got my first paycheck, and that was fun. And yeah, it wasn't a great year in 2014. I was very inconsistent. It was a big learning year for me, just to have to travel and figure stuff out, make sure I'm organized, booking things, and make sure the dates are right, and choosing events that when I need to play, and when my body's telling me that, you know, I need a break, and yeah, fit between tournaments to go see my coach, and yeah, a lot of things. And I miss a lot of cuts. I think I played 20 events and I missed probably 14 cuts, made 7 cuts. And in the summer, and I think it was July, I played in the Toledo Marathon Classic. I think at that time I was like 120 something, 130 on the money list. I needed like a good week, and I was just so sick of like missing cuts and searching and trying to figure out what's wrong for like 6 months. And that week I just go, you know what, like I get to where I am because I was good enough, and I need to just go and play golf, and it's like not play afraid and just play and see what I could do, right? And I went out and played amazing, and I finished 4th, I believe. I needed to birdie my last hole to put myself in the playoff, but I bogeyed. Wasn't the best finish, but it was a heck of a week to just put myself back into position for next year. And I thought that was fun. And it was the first time that I put myself in that position, and I learned a lot since. And yeah, it's been a very big roller coaster ride since 2014, but I wouldn't trade. I had a really tough couple years in 2017 and 18, and I'm sure everyone on tour has gone through those few years where, you know, you kind of feel like you're in a slump, you kind of feel like you're down in a spiral where you just can't get yourself back up. But I was fortunate enough that, you know, I have a good team of people around me, amazing coach and trainer and family and friends that, you know, just been giving me really positive vibes through my down times. And yeah, just trying to find that little something that's in me that keeps myself fired up and wanting to get up in the morning and go work and play good enough to get myself back on the LPGA.
What was it like to look up on the leaderboard and see your name up there? What kind of motivation did that give you?
Oh yeah, big time. In 2017 and 18, I had the worst 2017, I had the worst year, which led me lost my LPGA card. And in 2018 and 19, I have to go back and play on the Symmetra Tour. And 2018 was a year that was horrible, that I would think a lot of people would have quit. And I don't know why I didn't quit. That question came up to me many times, but I just knew that I was good enough, that I was aware that I was in a spiral, and I was aware that, you know, this is something that everyone has to go through. yes, some days I wake up and I go, I don't deserve this, but I'm so happy that I was able to go through those tough couple years, because if not, I wouldn't be so appreciative and what's the word I'm searching for? Yes, appreciative of just being on the LPGA tour. I just felt like wasn't a fluke in 2013 when I got my card, but yes, I didn't give myself a heck of a lot of pressure. Then when I went back to Q school last year, it was pressure times 1,000. When you know that's your job on the line, that's what you have to do, and you can't make a mistake. Like 2013 Q school and 2019 Q school is for sure two different mentality going into the event. But I'm just happy that, you know, I'm hopefully not ever gonna go through that again. But if I do, I know what it feels like and what I have to do to get myself out of it.
Do you enjoy that feeling of pressure? Do you enjoy those nerves, or is it something you're kind
of shocked? That's why I play golf. If not, I would have gone back and played volleyball, where I can rely on other people. That's what I love about golf. It's that pressure that you have to do it at that moment, and it's all you and your caddy. So
how's your memory? Do you forget bad shots and leave them behind you? Last hole, let it go?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a robot type where I can just go, oh yeah, it was a bad shot, let's move on. Like sometimes I do linger for a couple shots, but I do try really hard to fight that and try to look at the positive and find a little drive in me that make that go away and create another good shot, I guess.
What kind of relationship do you want from your caddy? Do you like someone that motivates you, get you in there? Do you like someone to just sit back and carry your bag and give you the numbers?
I think a little of both. Not every time I don't need a bad pet talk. I hate the pet talk every time. Like, you know, sometimes I do need just me to just vent it out. But sometimes I do need a pet talk. So I guess it's a relationship where, you know, you get to know each other, and that's when he will know, okay, here's when I can step in and I can say, okay, Cal, let's get it back. Or he will let me go the next time. Or, you know, it's something that he has to know me. Like, I can't say, can you give me a pep talk now? Like, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, no, I think Casey's been doing a great job the 2 weeks that we get to work together. And, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot to learn about each other.
We're really hoping to develop that relationship. I know both of us are sitting in the same opinion with that. And we, you know, two weeks is not enough, and we really, really are itching to get back. I can't wait. So just about, you know, okay, we're just trying to move on here, but you're a totally different human from, you know, your first Q school to your next Q school. You've gone through so many ups, downs, challenges. Like, for sure you're a different person. Your outlook is not ever going to be the same. You went from being like a kid essentially to, you know, a woman, right? So you lose your card, you go back and you win on the Symetra Tour. Now, like, that's your first professional win. Is that correct?
No. I actually won twice in Malaysia before I won twice in 2019 in January in Malaysia. I played two professional events in Malaysia before I came out, and which gave me the biggest boost of confidence from what I went through in 2018 and 17. And yeah, it gave me a good, very good confident boost going into 2019. And I mean, I think I played really bad in my first event on the Symetra. I think I shot like, I don't even want to say it. I shot horrible. And in the next event, and I won the second event on a Symetra for 2019. And I just told myself, I said, you know what? Like, it doesn't, like, so many times I caught myself in, like, you know, you play bad, like you know, you probably missed the cut for a few events, and it you almost define yourself with the way you play. And it's so hard for myself to not look at, like, hey, like, people don't look at your score to think that you suck, like, you know, like that kind of thing. Like, I just told myself that, you know what, it doesn't matter, like, just go play, like, you know, you're good enough to play. And I knew I was so close in playing so well and it was just a bad week the week before, and yeah, I went out and won the next week, which I think a lot of it says that, you know, it's where you are mentally going into the week.
One of the kind of consistencies we've been hearing from this podcast is, like, from a lot of the ladies, is you're not your score, right? Like, people aren't judging you by missing the cut. People right. don't really care, right? Like, you're coming home, you're still Kelly, you're still that awesome person picking up the kids after your round, you know, smiles on their faces and your faces. It's just like, golf is what you do. It's not who you are. And that's something that right. we've really been hearing.
Yeah, but it's tough because you do this every day and you get caught up in it. So I think it's tough that way. But yeah, you just got to constantly keep telling yourself that, you know.
Would you say that losing your card then and coming back is like a failure that's helped you get to where you are then and you're ready to move on? Like, what's that motivation like?
Oh, absolutely. Like, again, like, I'm going to say that, you know, I would think many people that if they will have to go through the 2 years that I went through, I would say 90% of the people would have quit. But it's just something in me that I know that wasn't good enough, and I knew that I could be better. And it's what keeps me waking up in the morning and go, okay, I think I'm a little, like, just looking at little things, like little goals that I set every day and go, okay, like, okay, I'm having trouble with my driver. Like, I can't hit it on this planet. Like, what's wrong? Okay. So you go, and I didn't search for drivers. I stopped searching for drivers, and my coach told me to not practice driver. I thought that was the best advice he's ever given me. He's like, when you finish your round, don't even hit drivers, even though driver was what caused your round today. Like, don't even like think about it, because eventually it gets in your head, right? So yeah, I just keep doing that. And during the off season, I didn't pick up my club for almost 2 months, and I thought that was the greatest thing. Like, I waited, because I've had two bad years, so it wasn't like, oh, I'm so excited to like go play golf. Like, I just wanted a break, and I thought those 2 months were the time where, you know, I get to spend my family, I get to not think about golf, I get to work out, and I get to just relax. And one day I go, okay, I think I'm ready, and you go play, and you're like, okay, maybe I can golf again. And that's when, you know, your happy juice come back, and you go, okay, yeah, let's go work on this and work on that. And eventually, you know, you just find a little motivation that gets you back. Like, everyone's different. Whatever I say doesn't mean that it will motivate you, but, you know, it's just something in me that tells me that, you know, just keep working, you'll be fine.
I want some of that happy juice. It reminds me of a quote, just hearing your perseverance is, it's not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog. And I think Kelly Tan's got a lot of fight in her, right? Okay, well, let's move on, Kelly. I got another question. Again, so one of Ron and I's mission statements with this podcast is, like, we're really, really enjoying this. And when the thing about the LPGA is it's so international, all right? There's so many different countries represented. And when we go and Google you, or, you know, we had Gabby on the show last week, like, we need to be in those countries in order to gain information. And, you know, now when this comes out, there's going to be a podcast on the internet, and people will be able to see the Kelly Tan story. What story I wasn't able to find was the Cinderella story of you quite recently being in we don't even know what it is. I think it's a Korean version of the Big Break. I couldn't find any information on it other than some hashtag stuff. Can you tell the listeners about the Cinderella story, please?
Yeah, I was chosen to be on the show for the season 2. Actually, that happened in 2019 as well. I guess 2019 was like a big change in my life. Yeah, we filmed in middle of January to, I think, a couple weeks we filmed for 10 episodes. And Cinderella story is, I would say, an Asian version of the Big Break. A lot of the challenges are, I mean, I didn't watch the whole Big Break, but I've seen some of the challenges that they did on the show, and I thought it was very, very similar. So it was like a golf TV reality show, right? For people that doesn't know Big Break. And yeah, it was 10 ladies from Asian country, and we have one Brazilian girl. And it was filmed in Korea and Malaysia. So I don't know why they chose Malaysia, but it was Malaysia. And they do different challenges, and they have long drive challenge. They have, you know, short distance, like pitching. They have putting. They have chipping. They have bunker shots. They have flop shot over that board. And they have mid irons, long irons. And then when you go through these three challenges, you get points on where you finish. Like first, you get probably 10. I don't know. I forgot the point system. And if you get 10, you get 1 point. So you accumulate your points. And I think seven challenges later, there's like a knockout of three at a time. And when you go to the final, there's only like four final girls, and you play 36 holes, and it determines the winner. And I won the show. And yes, you do get information from Cinderella. If you have to go to YouTube to type Cinderella Story Season 2. And there should be 10 episodes on YouTube, and you can watch. And yeah, it was not like competitive golf, but in another way it's competitive because, you know, you're trying to finish high up. And I think it's actually more pressure because, I mean, I've never been in a position where when you hit a shot, there's 35 cameras on you. When you do everything, and your mic's on you 24/7, and it's a reality show almost, right? So.
Did they recruit for that show or sign up for it?
They recruited players, yep. Yeah.
And how long did that span over? Like, is it, like you said, it's reality TV. There's 10 episodes. Like, are you all living in a house together or something? Like, I've got some picture painted.
Yeah, they put like, so when we're in Korea, you have a roommate that you don't know till you get in your room. It was in a fancy hotel, like 20 stars. Yeah, it's like gold plated everywhere. And yeah, you get picked up in like a Bentley. And yeah, it's really like fancy. You have to watch it. I can tell you everything. And in Malaysia, it's the same thing. You room with another player. There's two girls in a hotel room.
So what kind of experience was that overall for you?
I love it. And I think it's a great idea. And most people should try it just because it's like most LPGA players should be able to like they should recruit LPGA players just because it's different. It's not like you get up and you're like, I'm going to win the tournament. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's different.
Did you feel like you were the standout? Did you feel like the standout, you know, cause you're LPGA and, you know, had so much success. Like, I don't know who's the other, are they rising stars on there or?
Yeah, they were rising stars. They were great players on the Asian tour, Thailand tour, China tour, like they were great players.
Cool.
But we all, because it was most of them are Asian, and we play tournaments growing up together, like as an amateur when you represent a country. So we know who we each other are once we got on the show. It's just that you don't know who's gonna be on the show till you get there.
And you get some exemption on the tour, the KLPGA, is that correct? And but I think you just forego that. You're like, get me back on the LPGA type deal.
Yeah. So I knew the whole thing was, you know, what they told me, like if you win, you're gonna get 10 exemptions on the KLPGA tour and da 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 da. And I was like, okay, yo, that was cool. But I mean, I never again, like I had the mentality of when I was going to Q school in 2013, I'm like, I just want to see where I stand. Like, I just want to see what this whole thing is. And I think it's a good exposure. And it wasn't like, oh, I'm here to win. Like I didn't have that in me, but when I play, I want to win, but it wasn't like my biggest goal. Like, you know, when I got there, I need to win. It's more like, I want to give myself the exposure and I think this is fun and I just want to try. And of course, when I won, they're like, here you go, it's the 10th KLPGA tour start. And I'm like, that's not my dream. I'm going to play on the Sumatra tour to get myself back on the LPGA. And they're like, oh, they were like so stunned when I said that. They're like, do you know how many people would die to be in your shoe? And I'm like, do you know how many people would die to be in my shoe? Yeah. And then I go out and I won my first second event because I was like, well, let's see how my season go. Because if I have weeks off, I'll go over and play like a few events, but I can't commit to 10 events, right? And so the producer or the organizer was like, okay, like keep in touch. And as soon as I won my second event, I'm like, I'm out, guys. Like I'm way into the, like I can't give any weeks up now on Smetra just because I want to keep my rankings up. And I mean, they were very understanding and I was grateful for that. And yeah, it was a fun experience overall.
I read today that the Korean tour is projecting to go back and play in the middle of May. Just food for thought. I don't know.
Yeah, I think in Asia, they're doing a good job in controlling the virus and having their movement control order in place. And yeah, I wouldn't doubt that, but it will make me jealous.
Me too. Well, Kelly, we're so gracious with your time. And I swear we only have a few more questions here before we wrap up. I guess I'm wondering, like, which people or activities when you're on the road and you had, you know, you played 3-4 events in a row, make you feel most relieved when you get home from the golf course or like a long stint on the road?
You mean like which tournament that I go?
No, so when you've had a lot of time on the road and you're looking forward to something else, like what do you want to do when you get a time off, or who do you want to see, you know, what gives you a bit of a stress relief?
Yeah, well, I wish I can just fly home to Malaysia for a couple hours, but the flight's way too long. But I'm grateful that I get to, you know, just FaceTime my family whenever I want. And that helps a lot that, you know, I don't feel like, you know, I have to physically be there as much as I wish I could. Mostly when during my weeks off, I probably golf a couple of fun rounds with my friends here in Calgary and work out with my trainer and hang out with my boyfriend and do nothing, watch Netflix. Because I don't get to do that when I'm on the road. Like, because I try and stay with my host family. So after golf, I go home and I play with the kids and we have dinner and catch up. And I don't really have time by myself. Really, unless I go and do my nails or do my hair, like the one odd week or one odd day, really. But when I do come back to Calgary, I try to do all that kind of stuff and try to relax and watch Netflix and TV. Because people always ask me about TV series and I'm like, don't even tell me because I don't watch TV and it's kind of embarrassing.
I'm the same as you. I've watched two movies in this whole time of quarantine. I don't know. I'll read a book or something. But we're not really famous for cuisine, but is Dusty making sure you have a healthy dose of that Alberta beef up there?
Oh, yeah. We love our steak up here. But because of coronavirus, we've been ordering a lot. I mean, I shouldn't give them so much advertisement right here. I've ordered a lot from HelloFresh and Good Food and Chef's Plate. I don't know if you've heard about them.
I ordered my first Good Food box that's due to show up on Friday. So I'm curious. I've heard a lot of good reviews, but I'm a bit of a foodie and I also like to cook a lot. So I really need to judge it for myself.
Yeah. I would tell you I'm a big foodie, big time. And I love food and I do judge about, you know, how good they are. And I've ordered from these three companies and they're amazing. I have not had one meal where I go, it's not 10 out of 10. So I do speak very, very highly of them. And I might keep ordering them when I get on the road, just because like I can just change address and have them send it to my next host. I mean, most of the time they cook for me, but if I do stay by myself, I guess I would do that. Like I don't know why I haven't done that, but I'm glad that I got to do it while I'm, like during this time, because I do look forward to like, oh, it's 5:30, let's go make dinner, let's see what we want to make.
Kelly Tan's food blog. I love laksa. I just laksa from maybe I said that wrong, Malaysia. There's nothing like it. If you get a proper one, it's unbeatable.
Okay, well, maybe I will ask my mom for a recipe and you can yourself.
That sounds good to me. I just got one more question. I don't know how you're doing, Ronnie, but what's something absurd or quirky? This hasn't come out yet. I haven't got to probe you enough. Something absurd or quirky on the golf course, you know, maybe superstition. If I was to give you an example, the one example I've been throwing out there is I have to have 3 wooden tees in my pocket, a toonie, which you know what a toonie is, to mark my ball, and a tiny little metal divot repair tool. Is there something that you have on or off the golf course?
I wouldn't say I have a superstitious, but I do have my routine. I have about 4 long tees, they're wooden. I have a repair tools that I guess, you know, whatever you just mentioned just now.
Divot repair tool?
Yeah, divot repair tool. And I have a short tee and my marker is on my hat. I mean, I don't have, like, it's not like a superstition thing, like, but I do like to have 4 long tees, 1 short tee and a divot repair tool in my pocket. But I don't, I'm not like a, when people go, oh, I only play number 2 or I only play number 3. I think I play number 1, number 4, number 3, maybe less number 2 because I don't love 2 as much. Like, it's not like because 2 means okay. bad, right?
This is quirky. This is the definition of quirky, right?
I play 1, 3, and 4.
All right. And what is it about, I think I can speak on this a little bit too, but like, or did we just grow up with wood tees where I hate that bend. Like, why do they have to be wood tees? Like, I like it to just break and be gone. Like, what, those plastic things? Come on.
Well, I just don't like the plastic thing because it makes a mark on my driver, on my woods, on my irons. I just, and the wood seems to me feels better. I don't know. I just don't like the plastic thing.
I hear you. It's one of those things you can't put your finger on it. It's just, it is what it is. Thanks. Go ahead, Ronnie. What are you feeling for Kelly there? I'm pretty much all wrapped up here, man.
You know, I'm a big golf fan. I've been, and I love watching the little kids get autographs and give balls away. Tell me about your first time somebody asked for an autograph for you. Was it your rookie year? When did you start signing autographs and balls?
I was 17 when the LPGA first came to Malaysia. Yeah, I actually remember on that Wednesday night, I had to know how my autograph's going to be like. Like, I was like practicing 100 times. I'm like, tomorrow somebody's going to ask me. I'm going to be like, oh, I don't even know what I'm doing here. So I did practice on that Wednesday night in 2011. I can probably look up the dates too if I want to. But I did practice, and yeah, I got asked that Thursday after my first round for autographs.
Well, it's very special. Very special what you do for fans. We love it out there when we get a ball. I still love collecting balls and autographs myself, so I'm a big fan outside the ropes. We appreciate you doing that.
Yeah, but I'm just here speaking out loud to all the fans that I wish that, you know, kids or parents or, you know, spectators would come up and go, hey, can I have a signed ball? Hey, can you sign my hat? Like, I feel like most of the spectators are not, like, they feel like they're in our way, or they feel like they're, you know, I don't know.
We're starstruck. We're kind of starstruck a little bit. You guys,
well, if you don't ask, you don't get. That's the thing. Like, but I'm very observant, especially to the little kids, because I mean, I've been there standing by the ropes where like people just walk by me and I'm like, I just wish I would have asked. Like, so when I see kids and they look at you, you kind of know. I'm like, would you like my autograph? Like, you know, if you asked, I would have given it to you. And then, would you like a ball? Would you like a glove? And they're like, oh, yes. And then that's when you know there's like 30 kids around you. And you're like, sorry, I'm out of all the balls and gloves.
That's wonderful.
And I'll touch on that just a little bit more. First of all, I hope, well, maybe I don't know, but that I have to practice my signature to give out autographs one day. That'd be really cool. But one thing I observed in Australia with Kelly, especially, you know, we had a couple bad days, but there's this one specific moment, and I just want to tell the listeners when, and you know, granted, it was a somebody that I knew, but there was 2 little girls following us, and we had a bad day that day, and she just picked up this little girl, and it was like the round, the bad finish was over. Kelly said, you want to ride on the buggy? You don't get a choice. Kelly picks her up, pops on the back of the cart and rides to the clubhouse. Dad, are you okay? She'll be with me, Dad. She'll be with me. And made this kid's day. And at that point, I was like, this is a good person. I can work for her. This is all right. So really, really cool.
Yeah. No, that was fun. I think it helps when your name's Kelly too.
Yeah, same name. But again, Kelly, thanks so much. This means a lot to me. Really, really feel like I know you even that bit more, which is great. I really hope we can get going in Arkansas again. Only the political climate will be able to see what happens with all that. We're all day by day. But why don't you tell everybody where to find you? I know you're really active on social media and, just your handles. I think you have a Kelly Tan Invitational Golf Tournament. Just any information to help yourself there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really active on social media, and you can follow me on Instagram at KellyTan33 and Facebook. I have a fan page of Kelly Tan LPGA as well. You can follow me there. And yeah, that's where you'll find me most of the time, and I'm on it every day.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Kelly. Ronnie, had a blast, and stay on the line, and we will see you all next week.
You're all dismissed.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us on this week's episode of Let's Talk Divots. Very, very cool for me to get to interview my boss, so we really hope you enjoyed that. If there was something special from the show that you enjoyed, please don't hesitate to reach out. letstalkdivots@gmail.com or any of our social media platforms. We are at Let's Talk Divots. We really appreciate you guys listening, sharing, liking, commenting, any of that stuff. And we look forward to bringing you more content from another person within the LPGA next week.